This is the Talk of Fame Network on SB Nation Radio from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's Clark Judge, Rick Goslin, and Ron Borges.
Well, as you should know by now, there are 15 modern era finalists for the Pro Football Hall of Fame's class of 2018, but only five will be chosen on February 3rd, the day before Super Bowl 52. And in all likelihood, one of those five will be our next guest, and that's former Ravens linebacker Ray Lewis, who's in his first year of eligibility. Now, Ray was a 13-time Pro Bowler, a 10-time All-Pro, a first-team All-Decade, two-time Defensive Player of the Year, two-time Super Bowl champ, and Super Bowl MVP. He also has a statue of himself outside of Baltimore's M&T Bank Stadium, along with, yes, John Unitas. Well, in short, I guess what I'm saying is he checked all the boxes, and I, for one, intend to check a box with his name on it on February 3rd. Ray, first of all, thanks for rejoining us. And before we get to the Hall of Fame, I want to ask you about Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. This is his eighth trip to the Super Bowl in 16 years. You know how difficult it is to get to that game. And you often stood in his way or in their way. What does this accomplishment say about him and or New England?
Well, I think, honestly, what it says about them is, you know, it's one thing I've always said about the game, right, about being considered the, whether it's the greatest team, greatest player, whatever, it's consistency, you know. And when you look at it time and time again, it's just the consistency that this organization just displays. And so even when you're watching it the other night, you know, you see nice young talents and stuff, you know, in Jacksonville and everything. But when it comes down to it, man, the consistent, you know, experience that this organization has, as well as him. I mean, TB is just, he's a special, special player. And, you know, they come around, you know, every, 15, 20 years, you know. And when you see it, it's something to sit back and watch, because it's going to be probably another 15, 20 years before it comes back around. But, I mean, the ultimate respect, man, congratulations to him. It's just absolutely amazing.
Right, last team to beat New England at home in the playoffs was your Ravens, and you did it twice.
Yeah, I knew you were going to bring that up.
Yeah, that was a good game.
You guys, Brady struggles against you guys. So what's the magic formula here for the Eagles?
Well, look, I was showing some things on Showtime today, you know, that's going to show tonight. Just about some mistakes that, you know, Jacksonville made, right? So you think about, you know, coaches, right? It's a lot of times just coaches, right? They want to change, you know, what the team looks like. They want to get faster. They want to get younger. But a lot of people don't think about experience, right? Like true experience, like game experience. Like it's invaluable. It's almost impossible to replace it. You watched Jacksonville the other day. And I highlighted on Showtime, as I mentioned again, about, like, I get it, right? Tom Brady is great. I think he's the greatest quarterback of all time, without question. But when you look at the things that he's throwing in, the windows that he has to throw, not even blown coverages, just people not doing their job. So when you ask what Philly is going to have to do, you know, one thing about Jim Schwartz was in Baltimore with me for many years. And one thing about Jim is we've always said, look, if you're going to get beat, you got to get beat swinging, right? And what does that mean? Jacksonville had the opportunity when Gronk went down to blitz the New England Patriots. I did not know why he never blitzed the New England Patriots. You cannot get to Tom. You cannot get to the head or beat New England unless you get to the head. And the head is Tom Brady. So I think Philly is going to have a tough task on how do they dial up blitzes without letting him know what coverage you're in, we're doing it. And that's one of the successes I think we had against Tom over the years. Yeah.
Well, you know, just in that regard, Ray, because I think you're 100% right, and I was at the game, and the one thing I noticed was for much of the game, and the Jacksonville Corners talked about it after, you know, they were playing some form of press coverage, and then the fourth quarter they ordered him back into these soft zones, and he killed them. Brady killed him like he always does. Meanwhile, the Patriots launched all these blitzes from their corners and safeties in the second half, which they hardly ever run. It was like the experienced team went for the win, and the young team didn't. Is that sort of what you saw?
Now, that's so funny you say that, because I want you to think about this from this perspective. And this is what I've been trying to hone in on with why the Patriots are winning so much. because they are, listen to this, from an offensive perspective, they are a player-driven offense. What does that mean? Tom Brady does not look to the sideline to get what the plays is he's going to call. Tom Brady knows exactly what he's going to do. When I had my defense in Baltimore for so many years, we didn't have to look to the sideline to get the next defensive call to make a call. See, and that's one of the things. Like, you know, these coordinators, they're you know, instructing young kids to say, okay, this is what we're going to do. And guess what they're doing? They're doing exactly what the coach says do. If it says drop, hook, curl, oh, I'm going to drop, hook, curl. I'm not going to locate the receiver. You have to play the game from on the field. You have to be an on-the-field general. And that's where a bunch of these young, talented defenses struggle at so much. The concept, listen to this, the concept that Tom Brady is running, he has not changed his concept one time. You know what that means? You know what that tells me? Since I've left the game and even before that, nobody's studying his concept. It took people like myself and it took people like the Giants and people who've had success against Tom Brady to have a veteran-ran group that can make adjustments on the fly on the field. Yeah.
We're speaking with Hall of Fame finalist Ray Lewis on the Talk of Fame Network, and you can find us on the web at talkoffamenetwork.com or on Twitter at Talk of Fame Net. And Ray, speaking of on-the-field generals, I want to talk about another one, and that would be you. I know you haven't been through this process before, and I'm talking about the Hall of Fame. So I'm going to ask you, how much time do you devote to thinking about the Hall of Fame? And if, in fact, you do, what would making it as a first ballot choice mean to you?
Look, as a kid, man, you dream to make it. You know, you dream just to one day be mentioned. You know, 1986, I was 11 years old, and I watched Lawrence Taylor do something in a game, and I looked at my grandfather and I said, "Papa, how do I do that?" And I then flipped the channel weeks later and saw Ronnie Lott and saw Wilbur Marshall and saw all of these greatnesses and watched Walter Payton, and I said to myself, "How do I do that?" And the one ingredient that I found that each one of those guys had was a hell of a work ethic that was so far above everybody else. And then I said, can I survive in this game? Can I get in this game? And once I created my work ethic, I said, you know what? Well, I'm okay with being in this game, but what do you have to do to be considered the greatest? What do you have to be considered a Hall of Famer? And I learned this. The respect of the people that you battle against, the respect that you get from your effort alone, from understanding the game, from playing the game at a high level and never taking plays off. Forget numbers. Numbers come and go. I get it. Numbers are always broken. But I'm talking about what will make you stand alone. And the one thing I've always said, that if I ever had the chance to put on a gold jacket, not just the honor of it, but it's what I know of where I came from. Man, I don't think you guys can ever understand, like, sometimes the struggle within yourself. You know, we talk about Tom, and he's talking about Tom versus time, right? Now, you got to go back to my world when I was not only versing time, but I'm versing nine surgeries. I'm talking about 37, 17 years in, and I'm saying, oh my gosh, like, you know, have I done enough? You know, can I do enough? What do I do? And man, so it's the most humbling thing that I have experienced in my career. And let me tell you guys why. I have never went backwards in my career. What does that mean? I have never watched a television copy game of not one of my games. I've never heard nobody speak about Ray Lewis playing a game. Never. Now, of course, I've watched film, you know, after we came in, but that's a silent copy. You don't hear nothing. You don't see the crowd reaction. You don't see none of that. So I've never experienced that. And for the first time, I'm coming home right now. I'm about to watch what everybody else say they've seen. And that, to me, it's so humbling because, you know, you hear it. You hear it. But to be considered with the Mike Singletary, to be considered with Lanier's, to be considered with the Dick Butkus's, to be considered with, oh my God, the Jack Hams, and oh, I can go on for days, man, of what I thought this game was based upon. Right, and now it's different, right? Because it's about you think you made it if you got a lot of Twitter followers and this and that. I believe you made it. I believe you made it when your peers pay respect. I'll never forget this. Franco Harris in Baltimore, in Pittsburgh. I think he was there in 1999, and I was running up and down the sideline on Pittsburgh sideline. And you got to understand this as a kid. If you hear this as a kid, a young kid, I'm young. And Franco Harris said, that's a football player right there. And I'm saying to myself, like, man, that's Franco Harris that just said that about me. You know? And so now, guys, we're having a totally different conversation to where it's an emotional thing for me to know in a week, in 2 weeks, that my name can be enshrined with some of the greatest legends and men to ever walk this face of this earth, man. I'm telling you, it blows my mind every time I think about it. Yeah.
Hey, Ray, if I was presenting you, I would go get that statue in front of M&T Bank and wheel it into the room and just say, take a look. Yeah, there you go. That's right. Okay, let me ask you this. As an authority, yeah. As an authority at the position, who was the greatest middle linebacker of all time?
Look, I guess I've never been a shy one. You know, I think I've done things to the position because I studied the position, you know, so much. And I think, you know, what I did with the position, you know, I don't know if I would put anybody in front of me at that position. And this ain't no disrespect, but I'm telling you, you know, my body worked from a football player perspective, right? If we were not breaking down positions, if we were just talking about just a football player, you know, not only what I did for my position, but I'm talking about what I did for the people around me. You know, I will put my body of work up against any person that's ever played professional sport when it comes to changing a culture and taking a culture and making it that. And so for you, when you ask me that question, look, man, I've been saying I'm the best at this for a long time. I won't stop saying it now. I would have to
kick
myself.
That's right. Why start now? You're exactly right.
Hey, Ray Lewis, thanks so much for the time. And you know what? I mean this. We look forward to seeing you in Minneapolis. We really do. We'll see you there next week.
Oh, man. I thank you guys so much, man. Seriously, thank you guys so much.
You'll recognize us because we'll be the guys with your statue.
Yeah, right. Wheeling it in. That's right.
That was Hall of Fame finalist Ray Lewis of the Baltimore Ravens. Up next is the 2-Minute Drill. This is the Talk of Fame Network.